Welcome to Rocket Ship, the home of epic React Native content. I'm Simon Grimm, creator of Galaxies.dev, and today's guest is another member from the Expo team. It is John Samp, a developer and designer and currently head of product at Expo. So John, thanks for joining me.
Hey everybody, yeah, thanks for having me. It's like awesome to finally be on the show.
Yeah, as we said before, I couldn't even recall all the names, Cedric, Evan, Mark, Katie, all the great people from Expo who have been here before, but you also have some interesting stories because this is actually going a bit into your background. You have previously been a herpetology researcher. It's actually hard for me to pronounce that even, so, and I had to look that word up, so I think it's like studying the little animals, or what is it?
Yeah, we'll say that three times fast. yeah, so herpetology is the study of frogs, lizards, and snakes. And so, yeah, I studied biology in college, which, yeah, I wonder how many people in the React Native community like started out with like computer
Interesting
science.
Interesting career. Okay.
So, yeah, I studied biology and did some research after college and was like, hey, maybe I should be a biology researcher. Then found out very quickly it is hard to be a biology researcher. It's very competitive. And I somehow stumbled into programming after that.
Yeah, that's a logical choice after that, definitely. I want to talk today about EAS because you're a head of product and you know a lot about EAS, but also about your background in apps because you have actually worked on the Codecademy app. So it's not Codecademy, it's Codecademy. I had to learn this as well. And you also released some apps on your own. So you're an interesting combination of biologist and tech enthusiast. But I really love to start with the one question I keep asking people at Expo. What are you actually doing at Expo? And maybe your answer is even easier than from the people before.
Well, there's only 35 of us at this point, so we end up doing a lot of things, but I'm the head of product at Expo. I also do most of our design work, and I do a little bit of front-end development as well. I also manage quite a few people.
Well, there we go. That's a broad spectrum of tasks you already do. But before we get into the technical side, I did some little research, and I want to hear a story because on your page, it says, I have a wild story where I had about 100 snakes in my car at once. Ask me. So, John, I'm asking you, how did you end up with 100 snakes in your car?
You know, it's not every day you have 100 snakes in your car.
I don't even want one snake in my car.
Yeah, so I'm doing herpetology research, and the professor I'm working for, he knows of this other university, actually in another state here in the U.S., and he was like, look, this other university, the professor is leaving and he has tons of amazing specimens. So one thing I didn't specify in the story is that all of these snakes, they're in formaldehyde. They were not living. They were not crawling around my car while okay. I was driving. But he wanted to get all of the snakes from that university. And so we went like early on a Saturday morning because we weren't sure if the university actually wanted to give them to us, but this professor really did. And so I was the only one with an SUV at the time. And so we took my car and we put all of the snakes and specimens in my car. And you have to actually, when you have that much formaldehyde in your car, you have to have the windows down because like you don't want to like get dizzy while you're driving.
Well, I don't know if like the React Native world and the adventures we face can challenge anything like that. I don't think we have great stories like that. But anyway, there's one more thing on your website. I just want to clarify this up front, or pretty much everywhere I looked you up, there's a notice. Please verify my identity with a video call. Someone is impersonating me. Is this actually happening to you, or is this an inside joke that I don't get?
Oh, yeah, this is actually happening. And it turns out that it's really easy to steal people's identities. And so someone years ago stole mine and did some like tax stuff with it, which I'm still actually trying to resolve. And so, yeah, be careful out there. It's a real thing.
Yeah, I know it happened to my co-host, my previous co-host, Simon Barker in the UK. He was doing a lot of Instagram and In Instagram, it's unbelievably easy. Like people just rip off your images and captions and just upload it on their accounts. I had several accounts impersonating me. And at one point, I think somebody reached out to him and said, hey, I had some dealings with this person and they stole my money. Why are you doing this to me? And like the other person. So yeah, people be careful, especially on Instagram. It's like the Wild West. You can report people. they have like five of your pictures, but Instagram is sometimes just not taking that stuff down for whatever reason in their algorithm. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway,
it's terrible.
Let's get to something positive. So you have done your work with a little snakes. How did you get into like React Native? What was that path like?
Yeah, so I started out as a self-taught coder, and I was making websites for some people I knew. And I guess I just kind of started realizing that instead of like going out with my friends to like get beers on Fridays nights, like I was just worried about like how CSS worked on websites. And I think that was a sign that was like, okay, maybe I should like look more into this programming thing. So
they made this meme out of you where this person stands like at the party edge and they don't know how cool CSS is. Is that you?
I know, it was my flex, pun intended.
Oh my.
I'm sorry. I'm going to be the worst guest ever.
Well, that was a good one. The flex was a good one. Okay, so you found your interest there, and then you quickly noticed. What was the time when you got into React Native?
So I got into React Native probably around 2017. That I got a job at Codecademy, was working on their website there, and noticed that like we really wanted to teach people how to code. And one of the most important parts of learning anything is that you need to practice. Mm-hmm. So we realized, okay, why don't we like make something that people can take around in their pockets, in their hands, to actually practice the stuff that they're learning on their desktop? And that is when I learned about React Native. One of my friends was making an app with it, and I was like, oh my God, I can use my web skills to make a native app. Like, I might as well try it. So that's where that got started.
How big was Codecademy at that point? Was it already a big company? I think like the name is probably popular to everyone right now. I don't know how big they are. So how big was the team back then? Because betting on React Native at that point was still very early, right?
Yeah, it was about 20 people, maybe 25 people, something around that. It was a lot smaller than it is now.
Okay, and what could you do with the Codecademy Go? Could you actually code in the app? I never used it. I haven't been a member of Codecademy, so what was like the whole goal of that app?
Yeah, so the whole goal was just to practice the stuff on the desktop that you would do there. And the main part that we did was we had quiz questions. So we would ask you things about code. And then we also had stuff like fill in the blank and also review cards to be like, what is, I don't know, the Flexbox property? And then it would tell you about that. And then it would sync with the courses that you were taking on Codecademy itself. So you would get review about the things that you were just coding on the website. So it was just to be inside the gaps between when you were learning on the desktop.
Oh, okay. I think at this point, it's quite a popular application. Is it still using the foundations? Oh my goodness, it has 34,000 ratings right now. Is this still the app that you developed back then, or did they at some point transition to a native app? Do you know about that?
It's still using React Native, and it's still using a lot of the code that I wrote. I'm quite sure like the elements look pretty identical. They have updated it in some ways to be a little bit more capable. It looks like they've updated dependencies as well, which is good. But yeah, like it was kind of a crazy story. Like we wanted to create this app, and everyone was like, well, no one knows Objective-C and Java back then, since like Swift and Kotlin weren't as popular. And we just made this app. It was me and a designer, and we showed it to our CEO, and he like was shocked that like something like that could even exist. And that is when I think I had the magic moment of like, oh my God, like people can use this to like take their web skills and make something like genuinely native. And it just like kind of blows people's minds away. Like people just don't even think this is possible. And that was like pretty magical.
Yeah, I assume that still happens right as we talk to many people checking out Expo or React Native in the first place. And the app, honestly, looks good. I mean, I'm not a competitor to Codecademy. I don't see like my platform Galaxies as a competitor to Team Treehouse or Codecademy. These are different platforms on a completely different scope. Like my adventure is more, it's just like me. It's personal. I reach out personally to the members. And these are much bigger brands. But it definitely looks great with a lot of AI-powered practice, review coding concepts. I should probably set something up like this for Galaxies. If you're interested, reach out, let me know. We can do this for Galaxies. John can probably help because he got some experience on that front.
Yeah, I have experience.
So how long did the app development process back then take you? You said you're pretty much on your own with one additional designer.
Yep. So it took us probably about 6 months to get to the first thing we released into the App Store. And then after that, I was able to work on it full time at work. This was just something I was working in my free time for the first 6 months, which is kind of weird to think about. But then I started full time, and then we got one other developer who started working on it with me after that. But yeah, it was awesome. It was a wild ride. We actually had a podcast about it for a little while.
Exactly. Yeah, I wanted to. I found this as well. I was kind of sad to see that it had only 10 episodes. I might listen to them if I want to do the same for Galaxies. How and why did you came up with the idea to do a 10-episode podcast season about the app development?
I mean, we just thought it was so cool. Like, nobody knows about this technology. Like, everybody's only talking about React or maybe, I don't know, like Ruby on Rails or other things back then. And we just wanted to talk more about like the trials and tribulations of building the app together. And so, yeah, my coworker at that point, her name's Emily. Her and I did this. It's called the Codecademy Go Cast because the app is called Codecademy Go.
Yeah, it's definitely good. It's actually what app of the day in 2019. So for everyone who's not listening to the 10 episodes of the Codecademy GoCast, what were like the biggest challenges you encountered while you were developing the Codecademy app with React Native back then?
So it's interesting because like there are a ton of challenges and we talk about them in the GoCast. Like back then I was using Sagas to do all of my effects and that was a challenge. Testing apps back then was harder than it is now, although I'd still say it's kind of hard. That's something that like we can make better as a community. Like Maestro is very cool, but I don't think existed back then, or at least I didn't know about it. And then you can probably, like, if you listen to the podcast, you can definitely tell I was a noob developer in a lot of ways. Like I didn't really understand the fundamentals of security in some ways. And so there was a point where like there was a security issue that I realized like late on a December night. And I was like, oh no, like someone could access this data because I didn't set up like the Firebase rules correctly. And then I was like, I need to fix this immediately. And I fixed it. And like, we talk about it in a whole episode about how we fixed it and like what went wrong.
Okay. I definitely have to listen to that. That sounds like a good, I mean, it's just a 10 episodes podcast. So, you finished after that. How long, or when did you start working at Expo, or was there something between Codecademy and Expo, or did you transition from there to Expo?
Yeah. So I went straight from Codecademy to Expo and like, so I built the app with Expo and with React Native, and it was just such a great like development experience. And I actually on Twitter, you probably know Brent of Expo, Brent Vatney. Mm-hmm. He tweeted that they were looking for someone who can do front end development and some design work. And so I like messaged him, and that's like, yeah, I mean, I flew out to California to talk to them like the following week and ended up getting a job.
I feel like Brent is the next one we're going to have on the podcast.
Brent has got to be the next one. Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. I think this happened to other developers. I think Evan as well. It was like a very early user of Expo, and then he transitioned to Expo. So working with Expo seems to be a good way to join the Expo company, right?
Yeah, it really is.
But beyond the Codecademy app, which you basically did as like an employee, you also have some other cool applications. One is actually somewhat successful. It's a coffee timer. I think it's called Single Origin. There's actually Single Origin 2. I don't know why we need a second version of a coffee timer, but maybe you can explain this. When and how did this app happen?
Well, and Single Origin 3 is next. No, I'm kidding.
That would be amazing.
Yeah. So a part about, I think everyone has hobbies. One of my hobbies is I love coffee. And so I do a lot of pour over coffees. And to get coffee just right, you need to pour at certain moments in the brewing process. And also you need to do some math about how much water to pour and how much at which times. And doing that amount of math in the morning when you're tired, you're sleepy, it's tough. And so I was like, great, this seems like a really simple app that I could make, that I could design and build myself in my free time. So yeah, I made this coffee timer app and it ended up doing like quite a bit better than I thought it would. And I've taken it a few places. Like I went to New York City Coffee Con with it and exhibited with a table there. And it was strange. Like people were coming up being like, I use your app every morning. And I'm like, how? And they were asking me like, did your company like send you out here from wherever you're based? I'm like, no, it's just me in my apartment.
Do you have any goals for that application? I see on Android, it is actually a paid application. On iOS, it is free. That's interesting. That's an interesting model.
Oh, that's a mistake. I need to actually make it free on Android.
Okay, good, good. I'm sorry for calling you out. Probably
so right after this, go and download on Android. It will be free.
Yeah, we're going to come back to that, like, switch to free in the end again, because I think you have a little hack there that I want to definitely hear more about. By the way, I also just downloaded it because I sometimes use the AeroPress, and whenever I use it every half year, I have to look up, like, how long, like 30 seconds, and then wait for 10, and then press for 5, and then I can totally see why we need a coffee timer. The funny thing is, like, these useless ideas usually do the best, so I try to do a lot of apps and SaaS products in the past, and they basically all failed besides like Galaxies and my platforms. But the one thing I did, like, let's just do this. I want to have this. It's the best. I have an app called, I think, Fast Track or something, or Quick Track, because I quickly wanted to track calories during my diet, and I did not want to track carbs and proteins. I just want to have calories, basically. And so I made this app because every other app is trying, oh, you have like these macros and everything. And I'm like, I don't care. I just want to know if I'm below 2,000 calories or not. So I made Quick Track. I made it completely for free because it was just for fun. And I don't know, it like gets 50 downloads a day and has several, like, I think it had like 40 or 50 ratings. And people are like, oh, this is so great. And yeah.
You made that. Like, I've actually been looking for like an app just like that. And I was thinking about building something that just does calories. I was like, I wonder if I could just get like my calorie burn from Apple Health and just compare the two. Like, that's all I want.
So I developed that app with Capacita and Ionic. And I wanted to integrate like my steps and calories burn. And at that point, I encountered some problems because I was not the right Capacita wrapper. So I actually think about Quick Track 2, which I want to do with Expo, and then correctly access the HealthKit information on both iOS and Android. So, yeah, I should probably do this. But, you know, we're all busy people, so usually that thing is not happening. You also had another app. Let's quickly cover that, which is a word check for Scrabble. Is that as popular as the coffee timer?
It's not quite as popular, but I think I get like 500-ish unique users per month on it, which is kind of nuts. So the way this started was I was at with my wife and her family, we were playing Scrabble, and we were having a hard time figuring out whether a word was valid or not. And if you go look up a word somewhere, like there are tons of ads everywhere. It's actually kind of hard to find the words. And they show you like anagrams of all the same letters on the same page, which is like tantamount to cheating in my eyes. And so I just wanted something that would just tell me yes or no with no ads. And so I was like, I bet I could build this on a Sunday. I built it on a Sunday. That is what is in the App Store. And yeah, it works great. I use the actual like Scrabble dictionary. You can go download it.
is there an API or is it like built into the application? Can you like download the Scrabble dictionary or what is it?
Yeah, it's a SQLite table. And I'm using like Expo's SQLite package to access that table and read entries from it. It's way simpler than you think. It just reads from a database and says if it exists, then it gives you a green check mark or not.
Yeah. Same like with the Quick Track application. Like the easiest ideas are probably the best, and I still work.
So
please go ahead.
Well, and it's nuts. Like, I don't think we talk about this enough. Like with React Native, with Expo, with all these technologies, like you can just create these hobby apps and they don't have to be like huge productions or huge teams or something. And I just don't think that's really existed before. Like another one that I never released because I want to make sense was like when I was dating my wife before we got married, we shared expenses. And so I made an expense app that we could just type in if we paid for like dinner or something. And then at the end of the month, it would figure out who owed who what, depending on what we bought through the month. And like, I didn't want to do authentication. So I just did like this internal distribution and I just put it on her phone and mine. And that's all we did. No authentication needed. And it's like, it's kind of cool. Like you don't have to have like a huge like production thing that goes on the App Store. It's like you can just make a little hobby app that you just share with one person, which is cool.
How did you share it on iOS? Was it like using an in-house profile? I haven't used those settings for a while. I don't know how it currently works. I know in the past you could have like, I don't know, 100 in-house devices or something, and you could, or in the past when you had like these profiles, you had to add a new device to the profile and you had to rebuild the application with a new profile and everything was a total mess. So how hard is it these days?
Yeah, you're right on. That's exactly what I did. I used EAS device create, which will do all of the ad hoc provisioning profiles, or it will set all those up for you and put them on your Apple account. Pretty much it adds a device to your Apple account that says it's okay for this device to sideload this app. And so when I make a build of my app, it will allow it to sideload on those devices. So I pretty much added her phone's like identifier and also mine. And then I can just send her a link and she can download it and it'll be on her home screen. But you're right. There's awesome. A limit to 100.
Yeah. So you can't use it like for everyone, right?
Yeah.
I want to come back to a few things here in a second, but I want to get your opinion on one thing, because you said everyone these days can develop a React Native application. And with Expo, it's super easy to just have this as a hobby and put out an application like we do, QuickTrack or WordCheck or whatever it might be, like combination of two words. however, there's like this trend that applications can't look like shit anymore. They should look like something in 2024 because people just expect this. And you as a developer and head of product at Expo, probably you know this best. So how can like a single developer create something that looks actually good these days, probably without hiring a designer? And maybe I don't have design skills. Like what level of animation or effects is required to do something these days?
Yeah, I think like what people are most familiar with is what you want to try to shoot for. So what you're going to be most familiar with is the native OS elements on your phone from like the manufacturer of your phone for like Android or iOS at this point, because it's a duopoly for the most part. I guess there's the Nothing phone, but we're not going to get into that. Or I think maybe they use Android. Anyway,
there was like the Fairphone in the past, which was completely fair.
So pretty much like you want to use the elements that the like native OS does. And that means you actually have to use like the exact same views. And React Native is really good at this because it's not emulating anything. It's actually using like the native like UI views and the native animations. This is one thing I love about like, so Evan Bacon made Expo Router. It's great because it just uses the native routers underneath. So you get all of the exact same animations, like when you slide over a stack or when the modals come up. And it just makes it a lot easier to get that yourself because you add a file and like all the animations are there. There's no like extra like design work. You don't have to sip your coffee and figure out all of the like tweening animations in between. It just works. So yeah, use the native stuff if you can.
Yeah, the interesting thing is I totally agree about the native stuff. However, in the previous episode last week with Gary Tuchman, which I actually just recorded before this, Gary explained, because he's a native Swift developer, and he noticed a lot of gaps between what exists in Swift and UIKit and what's available in React Native, because React Native tries to bring this cross-platform layer, and so it's not covering all the cool controls that actually exist in Swift. And he actually voted for that probably a company or something should come up and like fill this gap of bringing these all these like UI segment control and whatever native controls exist to React Native. Did you notice that gap as well between existing native stuff and what you get in React Native?
There are definitely some gaps. And those are gaps that we're hoping to fill. Although, yeah, like someone should do that. Maybe someone listening to this podcast right now.
Maybe a company that starts with E and ends with O.
Yeah, perhaps us as well. I don't work a ton on like the open source platform and the SDK. And so I actually wonder if they're working on something like this. We do have like the Expo Modules API, which helps people write a interface between the native layer and what you can access on the JavaScript side. And we also have config plugins, which allow you to like integrate those easily. But yeah, getting those native things, very important for making your apps feel really, really good.
Right. Yeah. Maybe Gary also comes with something up or Expo. I don't know. But I mean, the React Native community is great. And I'm sure at some point we're going to have that stuff. So I want to bring this back to EAS and what you said before. First of all, I would just like to clarify the word sideload, because I think I know what sideloading means, but I'm also not 100% sure. So could you explain what sideloading means?
So I think I used it earlier, but the idea that you can add, at least on the iOS side, an ad hoc provisioning profile, which allows you to get like a build onto your phone without having to download it off of the App Store. You can do this for development purposes, and you can only do it for 100 people on your Apple developer account. You can also do this on the Android side. Any .apk file you can download and use on your phone. It's a little more free and open to get those. And so in both cases, I think it's those are sideloading since they didn't come from the like production app stores.
Okay, so on iOS, how can I, let's say I want to build this app for my wife, my kid, my friend, whatever. How can I get that app to her in the easiest possible way?
So the easiest way there are always like a million ways to do things. But
I mean, you can also go through test flight and set up a whole test flight program and tell them, oh, you need to download the test flight app. But this is already like, this is getting into developer stuff. If I tell my wife to download the test flight app, I want to kind of like, I know for Android, just download this link, click this link, it downloads the APK and you're good. So what's like the fastest way for iOS?
Well, the fastest way is for you to go to your wife and steal her phone for just a moment. You go to your terminal and you run EAS device colon create. And this is going to show a QR code inside your terminal. You're going to take her phone and you're going to scan it. And when you scan it, it's going to, on her phone, say, would you like to install a provisioning profile? You're going to click yes. It's like three taps or something, and it tells you exactly what to do. This process takes like 15 seconds. It's really quick. So once you have that on her phone, like she is good. Then you go and make a build. And then you can send her a link and you can be like, hey, wife, do you want to go download this? Like, just click on this link and then it will just start downloading on her phone. So
then she basically downloads the IPA file.
Yep. It downloads the IPA file. It will load it onto her home screen. And then whenever you have a new version, you can just send her a new link and all she would have to do is tap.
Yeah. Or I can code push something to it. I don't know. Would it work in that case?
Yeah, and then you can use updates, and you can send updates over the air.
Nice. Okay, this partially probably answers my question, but I'm asking it still because I'm curious. Are you then using EAS for your private applications?
Yeah, I do. I find it makes my life a lot easier than having to use Xcode and Android Studio.
Yeah, this is interesting. So I think, I don't know if I released an Expo app yet. I think I built a couple of them, but I never released them. And so whenever I did something, it was more for testing purposes. And then so I went through like Xcode, and because I know how the native submission works, same for Android. There's no magic in doing this manually if you just have to do it like once a month, probably. You can easily do this. How long does it take me to set up EAS build correctly and maybe make it work with App Store and iOS if I'm just starting out? Is it like done in half an hour?
So the whole process would be, so if you want to set up EAS build, you would run EAS build colon configure in your terminal, and it's going to set up a configuration file where you can like alter what type of build you want, because not all builds are the same. There's debug builds, there's production builds, etc. So once you've done that, then when you run a build with EAS build, I think our average build time is something like 9 or 10 minutes on average. We also have large workers, and those take 4 or 5 minutes.
Is this for paid or for free accounts?
So you can use our, not the large workers, but the 9 or 10 minute workers for free. And you can get 30 of those every month for no cost.
Mm. Yeah. If you look at my commit history, I would quickly get through like 30 minutes.
And then after that, on demand. So you can just pay for what you use. You don't have to do like an enormous plan after that.
Yeah. Okay. But once I've done that, this also, as far as I know, configures like my profiles directly in my Android account and sets up everything for in my iOS account and sets up everything for Android. And after that, I can just with one command build and push to the platforms.
Yes, exactly. It's a little more involved on Google, actually, because you have to like push to the platform manually for the first time. But once you've done that, we can set up your credentials for you. And on iOS, this is a lot easier, where we set up all your credentials and then you can just run EAS build -- auto submit. And so it'll make the build. And if the build's successful, it pushes it straight to the app stores. It'll start processing there. It'll be on test flight. And then you're ready to submit it to the production app store after that.
Yeah, I think for my next application, so for QuickTrack 2, I will definitely right off the bat like install EAS and set it up, because I think it gives a lot of features. And also, for everyone listening, you can also do a local build with EAS, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, EAS build -- local.
Yeah, so for everyone who's like, oh, I don't want to pay at some point, you can do it locally. I think... little disclaimer, it's still not working, something not working on Windows or something. I think Evan corrected me on this, or Is there
that's a good question. Limitation? I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah, I think something about a local build on Windows. I mean, of course you can't do an iOS build on Windows. That should be pretty obvious. Maybe that was the limitation, or it was something regarding Linux. But anyway, if you want to, usually you can do a local build, and then you should be fine. Also, I think with if you're more interested in the whole topic of development builds and that stuff, check out the episode with KD that came out a couple of months ago. KD also nicely explained what development builds are, what the Expo Dev Client is, because I constantly get questions about these things. I feel like they're somewhat obvious, but maybe this is because I've used the tool for too long at this point. So you as an internal and user of Expo EAS, what do you think is really the coolest thing about EAS?
Okay, so the coolest thing recently, and maybe this is kind of small, but I just don't think it's really existed before in like the native land before, is so we have like an updates product. And by the way, like all of our services, you can use us for them and we can host them for you, but they're open protocols. So you can host them yourself. We publish these protocols. You don't have to pay us if you don't like to. You can always run them yourself, but we do try to make it easy. And that's kind of like what we're going for. Anyway, so with updates, when people think of over-the-air updates, I think most people think, okay, I've shipped something to the app store. There's a bug in my app. Oh, no, no, no. I need to fix this quickly. So I'll send an update and all of my users will get it. So that is a use case that works. However, the other use case that we're actually focusing a lot on now is sharing things with other people while you're in the development phase. So you can actually use updates to preview PRs. So every single time you push a commit to a branch on GitHub, you can create an update. And using that development client or the development build you were just talking about, you can just go tap on the branch names. And this is really helpful if you're working with a couple of other people, because you can just go into the development build and then like you can just tap on whichever branch anyone is working on. And so if you've got that stack of 10 PRs in front of you, you no longer have to be like, oh man, I'm going to have to clone all of these. I'm going to have to run it like NPX Expo Start, or like I'm going to have to run the server and like figure these out. Like, you can just scan a code or tap on it in the app and you can see exactly what they're working on. So to me, that's just like such a nice like process change that helps teams and like people working together like work faster together.
Yeah, I completely agree. I know this feature from pull requests with like Manitlify preview branch or something.
Exactly.
It is really like incredible helpful. Yeah. You just look at it and like, oh yeah, cool, that looks good, and merge. And making that work with EAS and native apps. I think this is one of the things that native developers are jealous of, right? Just like hot reload or whatever you want to call it, and code push. This is another one on the list of Swift developers would really love to have this.
Yeah, they would. And we're actually like, we're working on this a lot right now. And like all of this is technically possible. It's just hard. And we've heard from people like whenever I talk about this, people are like, oh my God, you can do that. And so we're actually like working on a much better onboarding to Expo that helps get people set up with an app that has Expo Router. It sets up these update previews. It's going to get you a development build and like get everything set up for you. So like you're ready to develop when you sign up. Right now, like if you sign up, you just like, you kind of get an empty dashboard and an empty app that says like, edit this file and go. And so we're hoping to make that a lot better.
Ah, that's interesting. So you're working on the onboarding experience for new Expo users.
Yep.
That's a smart choice. Yeah, I think I've been to my Expo dashboard a couple of times, but I usually feel like a little disconnect. Like I work locally with Expo, but the dashboard, that's a different thing. Probably they should be like connected more closely. And like whenever I spin up an Expo application, you should ask me if I want to do. Are you asking me already if you should create an Expo app? CLI, I don't think.
Kind of. There is a button somewhere, but it's not. I think you're onto something.
Okay, I'm looking forward to this. So you said you're working on this branching feature and the preview feature. What are the other big plans to EAS? Because as you said, your team is now 35 people at Expo. Not your team, but the whole Expo company. So what is the rest working on regarding EAS? I mean, not the team from Evan about the routing. We know he's doing some magic with router version 4, but what's coming next to EAS? What are the next plans?
So one thing that we've hinted at a little bit is we just came out with something with when you make a build, you can now add custom code at the end of it. People were having this problem where like they just wanted to send a Slack message to their team. So they had to set up like these GitHub actions that listened to webhooks that then like once it got done, then they would send a Slack message. Now you can do that right inside of the build job inside of your EAS build configuration. And that's going really well. And the more like we talk to customers and especially like small to large teams, the more we're figuring out like people are doing things on like both sides of builds. Like before the build, they're running unit tests and end-to-end tests with Maestro. And then after they're notifying their team and like doing a bunch of other things. So what we're working on is like, we're really thinking hard about like, how can people do more workflows around the stuff they're doing with React Native and with making builds and updates. Also like how people coordinate their teams. Like I just keep on hearing people say that like they've got an update or a build and then they have to go to Slack and like just message everybody at their company to like get the latest test flight build. And that takes like a whole week for enough people to get it such that they can get feedback. And then they have to like Slack with all these people and the communication costs there are really taxing and it prevents people from iterating and moving forward. So what we're working on is like, how can we let you run like more arbitrary code on our system, like more types of jobs? How can we let you also get approval from your team and also like have testers on your team, like test out the updates and builds and like give you qualitative feedback and like screenshots and like thumbs ups and thumbs downs. And then if we have all that information, you can automate some of this. Like maybe if you get 3 thumbs ups from people in your company, then you can be like, great, let's put this out to production. Or maybe if you get 3 thumbs down, like it just stops. It doesn't go anywhere after that.
It's interesting. Like Expo is becoming the real CI/CD platform for React Native in that case.
Yes. And so that is a goal of ours. And we keep on hearing like customers want to run more stuff along with our CI/CD and want to juggle fewer CI/CDs at the same time, which is what everyone's doing now. Like you use CircleCI, GitHub Actions, possibly us for the build and update part. And then like all of these have to coordinate together. And then people at companies just have to coordinate these forever. And it's difficult, it's tricky, and it's hard to understand.
Is there at this point like a limitation of how long my functions can run? I think I talked with Cedric about some theoretical problems that I could mine Bitcoin in those functions.
You know, funnily enough, I don't want to go back to Codecademy days, but we would run like learners code on our servers for free and Bitcoining operations were like a very hard thing for us to stop. So you've got to learn code site. I mean, watch out if you start doing more of that.
Yeah, I will definitely. But it sounds like you got a lot of insight into how teams are using React Native and the problems they face. We already talked about the branching aspect and like the communication. Are there any other challenges that teams currently face that you try to solve with Expo over the next time or with EAS?
Yeah, I think the other like, and maybe a kind of meta point to these is that we like, I think we have an opportunity to set some defaults that help people release better. And by that, I mean like making more stable releases. And when I say stable, I mean like have a release in general that has fewer bugs, because I think like everybody wants the same thing. Like you want to be the most dependable team at your company where like people aren't worried about the app you're shipping. They're worried about like other things at the company and like you're the dependable one. That feels good. In addition, if you can ship dependable stuff consistently, you can iterate faster, and then you can start experimenting with features that you might not have before. And so if we can remove some of the friction and the barriers here, you can just try more stuff. So the way that we're doing this is like, I've interviewed like 100 different companies on how they release their code to users over the past 5 years. And it turns out that like people generally follow like a few different release flows on how they like deliver code to end users. And release management is like a huge topic and there are tons of ways to do it. But people generally do it in like 3 big ways. There's some people like you and me probably just would run make a build and then go out to production. And like, that's kind of it. There's nothing really else.
Yeah.
A lot of companies will have a staging area and a production area where they test everything on staging and then go to production, which it feels good. And then like, if you get to a larger company that is very risk averse, you get to something called a branch promotion flow, which like you have different branches, you map them to different builds. And then the branches like move up through these different like alpha, beta staging production channels. And it's a whole process that someone really needs to manage. But at the other hand, it's very stable and you can go back to previous releases and fix things. So like one thing that I care a lot about is like, how do we default people into like some of these best practices such that like they can iterate really quickly? Like they can push things out, and when things go wrong, like they can fix it. It's not a huge deal. So that's another thing that like we're constantly thinking about. It's like, how do people build software? How do they get it to their users?
I mean, these groups have somewhat different requirements, like the one person like us just shipping stuff and the enterprise doing something else. Do you think you can combine these interests into what you're building at Expo? I feel like this might sort of be a challenge to satisfy everyone. And I mean, if you try to satisfy everyone, you know, you will probably satisfy no one at the end.
Yeah, it's like the like basketball courts in like a elementary school. Like they have lines for all the sports, and so they're not good for any of the sports.
Right. Yeah. But how would you think about these problems? Because I mean, these are different requirements.
Yeah, they are different requirements. And so the best that we can do is suggest one that will work for most people, which is probably this like staging area and production area. However, like we will show, and we do show like other ways to deploy your app and deliver code. And so some teams are going to be like, yeah, we need something more. And then you're going to have to go learn more and like figure out actually how these things work under the hood a little more. And then other people, we can just say, actually just like push to production. You're probably good with that if you've tested it locally. So I think it's just giving people options.
That sounds definitely good, and sounds like interesting things are coming. So, you are the head of product, which means you're not just doing EAS. Is there anything else cooking under the hood that you can like give us a little spoiler to? Maybe something you're designing that could happen like in half a year or a year. Is there anything cool that might be that you are actually allowed to share? Of course.
Well, I think the big thing is I talked about earlier with like we're thinking about workflows. We're also thinking about your team. One thing that has been a pain point for me is like we were talking earlier about how you can add people's phones to your account and then share apps with people. So the real use case for this is not for an expense app for me and my wife. It's actually for companies to share with other developers. And I'm just using it in sort of a strange way. Anyway, so right now when you add devices, pretty much we only tell you like iPhone, and then we say like a UDID after that. And it's kind of like hard to know who is who. Some companies will have hundreds of these, and then knowing like which ones you're actually sharing with is like really hard. So some things we're interested in are like maybe we could show a better list that are connected to your member accounts on your like organization, such that you know who, like this is Simon's phone, not just like some random iPhone. We can do some other things there too. Like we have a notification service that we are working on. And like we can get the push token for your phone, and then you could test your push notifications with like Simon's phone before you push it out to all of your users. So I think all of this is coming back to like, yeah, how do we let you test things easily? How do we get it to your team so that you can verify that your changes are good? And then once you like understand how the feature works and that it's looking okay, then you can push it out to your users quickly.
Yeah, I still remember the time when we had to manage our iOS profiles and the names, and then you had like Simon's iPhone 7, Simon's iPhone 8, Simon's iPhone 1 something, Simon Dev. Can we kick these? I don't know. Maybe we can. And then you had like a restriction of you can only twice a year change your provisioning profile and like remove devices at a certain point. Yeah, Apple, welcome. Welcome to the world of Apple. It's fun. but anyway, I didn't know where I leave off, but I wanted to ask you about one last hack. Oh, yeah, there was something you just said. What was it? In between, it was not screenshots. It was not Expo. I left it because my own story was so important in my head. Anyway, I thought you had given a little hint at something upcoming at Expo, but people listening, maybe you can ask John what it was. I definitely think there was an interesting word that you might be working on, but we know that Expo is always working on some great stuff, so I'm pretty sure cool things will come to Expo. Before we wrap up, I wanted to ask you one thing, because you shared a tip on Twitter that I saw. Here's an app growth hacking tip. Make an app, charge $1 for it for a while, and then make it free. I wanted to ask you, is this still relevant? Why did it work? And maybe why does it still work? Is this still something we can use?
Yeah, I think you can definitely still use this. Okay, so if you make an app and you charge just $1 for it for a while.
Nobody will buy it, usually.
almost no one will buy it. You'll make like a dollar a week, maybe. It's going to be very low yield for you. However, if you want your app to like blow up, make it free, because there's all of these like, I don't know, sort of shifty like apps gone free websites that will programmatically pick this up, and they'll be like, oh my God, this coffee app is now free. Like, you should go download it. And they send out emails to thousands and thousands of people. And then a lot of those people will just download it because it's free. So they aren't the highest quality leads for your app for sure. But I was able to do this a few times with like my coffee app and like get a lot of downloads for it. And then like when I made it paid again, it had enough like clout or like app store, like the app store was like, oh, this app has enough downloads, to where it started making it up on like some of the top charts of like food and beverage apps in certain countries. And then when it was paid, when it's on those charts, you could, that's a lot of free advertising and then people will actually buy it.
Huh. And then you can also like do this again, like after, I don't know, 6 weeks, 2 months, you put it at $1 again, and then 4 months later, you put it on free again.
Yeah, it's probably more like a 6 month cycle that you likely need to do. I don't know exactly how these sites work, but I was able to do it two or three times over the course of a couple years. And yeah, it's a tip.
That's an interesting hack. Yeah, my app is currently free. I will definitely set it to paid. I still don't know exactly if I can, like, as I said, this is a capacitor application and I kind of want to replace it with an Expo app. I don't know if I can just use the same bundle identifier and upload a completely different IPA. I don't know what Apple will say about that. Yeah, you think that works?
Yeah, that would absolutely work, I think.
Because I want to, of course, keep my great reviews for the QuickTrack application, and I want to become successful. Yeah, that's going to be interesting, and then I will apply your hack. So thank you so much for sharing that hack, John, but also for sharing all the other information about EAS and what's coming to EAS. Where can people find out more about you and what you're doing? What should they check out?
Okay, well, I'm on X or Twitter, whatever it's called these days, and you can find me, JONSAMP is my username there. Another great place to find me is on Discord. If you go to chat.expo.dev, we've got a huge community of React Native developers asking all kinds of questions about the apps they're building. So come and chat with me there. I'm often there. I'm trying to answer questions, often esoteric questions about random errors, but sometimes just about like what we're working on. So one of like my goals is like, yeah, how do people like want to develop? What are tools that we could build that are like valuable and good for people? Because if we can help build those and like make your life better and easier, like, yeah, that's how we get successful. And like, I don't know, how we can like contribute to the community that has like given so much to us.
That's awesome. And that's also awesome that you're able to navigate Discord, because it still freaks me out whenever I open it and see all my notifications. So everyone go to the Discord of Expo and send some questions John's way and follow him on Twitter. All the links will be in the show notes as always. And of course, if you're just getting started with React Native, check out galaxies.dev for some of the best React Native courses, most likely using Expo. So thank you, John, and I hope to bring you on again when there are some big updates to EAS in the future.
Yeah, thanks, Simon. It's been awesome.
Bye.
See ya.